Maybe you're here because you've run out of something to binge watch on Netflix. Maybe you're here because you're trying to make sense of things. Whatever the reason, many have found themselves looking for answers to big questions.
This is a space for honest, non-judgmental chat about some of life's real issues. And while we don't have all the answers, we are happy to ask the question, what's God got to do with it?
Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Mark.
We are totally out of our depth and honestly winging it a little.
But you'll be relieved to know that we're drafting in experts each episode to help us out. Welcome to this part two of our conversation with Jeremy McCoy on the topic of suffering. If you didn't listen to part one, I'd recommend you go back and have a look at last week's episode, which opened the conversation on suffering and asked the question, what's God got to do with it? This week, Jeremy McCoy continues this conversation for us, and I hope the conversation is helpful for you, causes you to think about things and perhaps ask some more questions. If you do want to ask more questions and get in touch, the email address is community@hebronaberdeen.org.uk, or you can find us on our webpage, hebron-evangelical.co.uk.
Just because we can't think of a reason does not mean that God doesn't have a good reason for why he allows suffering. And of course, then we go immediately to the cross of Christ. We can't think of this without the cross of Christ. You know, you look at the cross and Jesus' own disciples are horrified. You know, I can't believe you're going to a cross. Peter tells him off for going to a cross because he just does not get, and he could not get at that stage, why God was allowing his own son, the most innocent man who ever lived, to suffer horribly in death by crucifixion, enter our pain and enter our suffering. People couldn't understand what the cross was about, and yet God was doing his most magnificent work through some form of suffering and human evil being worked out that we couldn't possibly understand at the time. I hope that's making some kind of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Jesus on the cross. You mentioned how that is an answer to a lot of pain and suffering and evil. And how does that act as an answer? For a lot of people, Jesus is someone completely irrelevant. He's someone that lived 2,000 plus years ago. He is someone that there's a lot of statues of, and or someone that you mention in an expletive. But how does this person who lived over 2,000 years ago bring any relevance or comfort to someone who is in the absolute midst of suffering, who is in a space where they don't want to make sense of it? How can they bring any comfort to pain, whether it's physically or mentally?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that Christianity is the only philosophy, the only religion that even attempts an answer to pain. Christianity is the only one that says God is not aloof from his creation, watching his creatures suffer. He has come into his creation. He has taken all our evils and suffering upon himself. There's even the crown of thorns that Jesus wore. That's a symbol of the futility of evil and suffering. Of course, crown of thorns pointing us back to the Garden of Eden, where thorns and thistles first grew because of human sin. Jesus is taking the futility of evil and suffering upon himself. And Christianity is the only way we can attempt an answer. So atheism might have a simple answer, you know, bad things happen, we can't do anything about it, you know, we march to the beat of the drum of our DNA, the universe neither knows nor cares, as Dawkins keeps on telling us about our evil. That's not Christianity. Christianity is saying God himself has entered our evil, our suffering, in order to free us from it. And of course, we must link then the cross of Jesus to the resurrection, that miracle, because what Jesus has won for us, why this 2,000-year-old man, if I can put it that way, is so relevant, more relevant than the news tonight, is because he has entered our sin, suffering, struggle. He has taken it upon himself, and he has risen from the dead to give us the opportunity to flee from the effects of sin and death and hell, as the Bible puts it. Because Jesus has risen, the Apostle Paul says, all those who trust in him can be forgiven their sins today and can rise again to a new world where tears will be wiped away, where all sorrow will cease. Now, that is the Christian message, and I know of no other philosophy that offers even anything close to that as a solution. It's only Christianity that offers this golden hope, but golden hope not just in theory, but the fact that in real history, Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God, died in real history, took upon our sins upon himself in real history, rose again from the dead, literally and physically, and that is our hope. Be connected to Jesus, and you have hope forever. That's why this dead son of a carpenter from 2,000 years ago is the most relevant thing in life today.
So what does that look like for someone in practical terms, someone in ICU or someone in whose life has just fallen apart? What does it look like in their day-to-day life for the comfort that he brings and fleeing from our sin and fleeing from our the state that we're in? How have you seen it in your career, and how have you seen it just around you?
Well, this is why I think Christian theology is so rich and offers real answers, because I think, you know, if you're suffering, the fact that Jesus suffered helps us in two ways. Number one, he understands our suffering. He's been through it. Often when you're going through suffering, you just want a friend to come alongside you who gets you. And in fact, the last person in the world you want to speak to is somebody who doesn't get your pain, who dismisses it. Jesus understands our pain because he has felt physical pain, spiritual pain, emotional torture himself. Almost depression when you come to Gethsemane. I mean, he goes through every emotion we have felt. So we can speak to him as someone who understands, as someone who cares deeply. Interestingly, in the story of Jesus raising Lazarus, there's a whole build-up to that story where, of course, Jesus arrives late and Mary is saying to him, "Do you not care, Jesus? You arrived late and Lazarus is now dead." And Jesus knows he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead, but he still cries at his tomb. Jesus still weeps and feels for every sufferer. He's not aloof. So when we're going through deep suffering, Jesus is the closest friend we could have. What a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear, as the old hymn says. So that's one prong of it. But of course, I need Jesus to be more than just, he can empathize with me, he can sympathize with me. He has also offered the solution to my suffering, that one day his death and resurrection assures that when I die, that's not the end of the story. And both he understands my suffering today and because he's entered into it, and he can bring relief to my suffering ultimately in this new world that he's won for me by his death and resurrection.
That's wonderful. That really is great to kind of hear that condensed, all of that theology and just the kind of practical outworking of all of what this means for us now. And I think you've spoken so much to kind of the skeptics and things, but one of the things that you kind of hear sometimes is, you know, isn't Christianity just a crutch for weak people? And actually, I think you've probably done a lot to speak to that issue. And part of what it is to be a Christian is to realize that we are weak and we need something. But maybe you want to comment on that.
It's very interesting. I mean, when you think about the coronavirus pandemic that's bringing the world to its knees at the minute, more people are putting prayer into the Google search engine. More people are taking in church services. One in four now in the UK have listened to a church service since this coronavirus has come. Whatever else God is doing or allowing to happen in the great mystery that is, why is this happening? Surely one aspect of that is, this is a wake-up call. We need to realize we are vulnerable. We like to think we're in control of our lives. Fascinating as well, you know, science is the new God. Let's get rid of the God of miracles, because science can do it all. And we're discovering science cannot do it all. We're still looking for someone to find a cure. We love our medical staff that are helping us as much as they can, but science only goes so far. And even if science saves our lives now, it can't do anything when we die. Jesus Christ can. So I think that is exposing the vulnerability of humankind. And of course, when we're at our most vulnerable, we're most open to God. It's fascinating. If you look at the map of world Christianity right now, where Christianity is flourishing the most is among the poorest people and the people who suffer the most. People who suffer the most are most vulnerable to God. You would think the people who suffer the most are most blaming God. That's not the case. People who suffer the most are saying, God, I can't do this thing called life myself. I need your help. What's wrong with a crutch when you've got a broken leg? I need your help, God. And of course, we're right to Jesus' teaching, Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. God takes the weak things of this world who are prepared to say, God, I can't make this thing called life on myself. I need your help. I need the power of your spirit to do this thing called life. So does God then not have the right to bring us to our knees? C.S. Lewis famously said, God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks to us in our consciences, but he shouts at us in our pain. Pain is God's megaphone to arouse a deaf world. There's the mystery of suffering. Part of what God's doing, I'm certain, this is not the full picture, but surely part of what God's doing here is saying, I will take autonomous, self-sufficient people who never give me a thought, never give me a second thought. I will show my love and my grace and mercy to them by allowing this pain that will make them cry out to me for help, because ultimately they need me more than they need their next breath. Is God not wise to do that? Is he not good to do that? Is that not part of the conundrum here? People are much more likely to cry out for salvation when they're feeling weak and helpless than when, you know, they've got 2.4 children, a company car, a great salary, everything's going kushti, and who needs God?
So for someone who is searching for the first time in their lives, they're kind of interested in faith, they're kind of interested in Jesus, not enough to commit to go into a church or to take it too seriously, but what would you recommend their first steps be? What would be a good place to start if all of this is quite overwhelming? What would you say to them to do?
Yeah, and I can understand this is overwhelming. We're talking about, you know, these religious nutcases might not quite be the nutcases I've always thought they were. There's also the fear, of course, you know, if I start reading the Bible, my mates are going to think I'm, you know, I've lost my head. And of course, the fear that, you know, if I've really got to live this Christian lifestyle, my life's got to totally change. And I would say, you know, don't put that kind of pressure on yourself to begin with. Just investigate and let a growing excitement about who God is then lead you to take more and more steps towards him. If God is real, if Jesus Christ rose from the dead, he is also the most exciting thing you could possibly discover. And the excitement of discovering him will more than compensate for the pain and sacrifice of following him, which there is, of course, there is sacrifice. You know, I've been called a nut job more than once. And, you know, I'm sitting at my hairdresser's and my hairdresser's saying, you know, what do you do at the weekend? Oh, I'm a Bible teacher. And then I end of conversation, you know, or let's go on to something. Yeah, that's what I get my whole life. And I understand it. But I would simply say to people two very simple things. Number one, crack open a Bible. You don't even have to go to church and embarrass yourself in front of all these weirdos. Crack open a Bible. I would say get to a gospel, just the stories of Jesus. The gospels are just biographies of Jesus. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll find them about two-thirds of the way through a Bible. Just look up the index. I'd probably start with something like Mark, simply because it's the shortest gospel. You can have a good read through. If you're really searching for God, you know, you'll be so interested in Mark, you'll want to read all the others as well. But get the story of Jesus into your mind and then think, you know, are these invented stories? Did guys just make this up? What did they gain from it by making it up? You know, they were all killed for their faith in Jesus and for preaching about Jesus. So is there something more to this than meets the eye? And as you're reading the text for itself, for its, you know, read the Bible as it wants to be read, then also do the other scary thing, but that you can do by yourself without embarrassing yourself in front of anybody else. Pray. Deadly simple prayer. God, if you're out there, if you're real, then show yourself to me. Almost, I challenge you, God. I challenge you. I'm just about to say, you know, this God stuff's a load of nonsense and I'll get on with the rest of my life as normal, not let this thing trouble me. But God, until I make that decision, I'll offer you this challenge. Show yourself to me in some way, if you're real. Speak to me in some way, if you're real. What have you got to lose in asking that question? There are these guys, I don't know, you'll have seen the advert, Try Praying. It's a very simple little idea. People have spent money to get these adverts on buses, Try Praying. And there's been stories of, you know, people in Edinburgh they've come from some tragic experience in their lives. They just see this bus going by with try Brian, so they do. And they're astonished at some of the answers that are coming back. So I just say to people, read the Bible, read the core text, not what people say about the Bible, not what people say about Jesus and the Gospels. Read the thing for yourself and then pray, God, if you're real, take me to the next stage. You know, it's like the baseball idea. You know, you've got four bases. Base one, read a couple of Gospels, see if they get you going, and pray to God, show me, and then let him take you to base two, base three. Beautiful thing is, at the minute, you don't even have to go to church. Church is on the screen. Be that one in four in the UK who are actually sitting through a church service. But don't go to find out all the problems with the faith. You know, get past that. Go and say, what's the best version of Christianity? Not the Richard Dawkins version of Christianity. What's the best version of Christianity? And then let me see, could that mean something to my life? And then say, well, what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is I keep on living my atheist way, my humanist way. When I die, they'll bury me. I've at least got to give this Christianity thing a chance, because the other possibility is I'll live for, what, 60, 70, 80 years if I'm lucky. I'll die, and that's it. At some stage in those 60, 70, 80 years, give yourself a chance to discover something bigger, something outside the systems of thought that the culture are feeding into you. Open the Bible. There's a reason why it's the world's bestseller and has been every single year, let alone all the Bibles that are given away. I mean, 11 million Bibles bought in Brazil in 2011. That's just astonishing. 2011, 2,000 years after this guy was meant to die. Why is this thing still going? Why is this Jesus still the most famous person in the world? And of course, we get a skewed vision, because in the West now, we've given up on him largely. And we think, well, everybody's given up on Jesus now. But actually, in South America, Africa, China, Christianity, it's boom time. Christianity is still the largest people movement in the world and is the fastest growing people movement in the world. Ask why, and don't settle for simplistic answers.
What's the best way if someone is reading through a gospel, is finding it quite difficult to digest? What's the best way that they can get some help in reading through it?
Don't worry that some of it's difficult to digest. It's like entering a new world. I remember the first time I went to see baseball in America. This is the second baseball illustration. What's happening to me? I remember the first time I went to see baseball, and all these people were excited about it. I thought it was the most boring thing in the world. And then I started to read some of the batting stats. I started to understand what a curveball was, all this kind of stuff. And I started to get more interested in some of the characters and personalities in baseball. Second time I went to see baseball, it was more interesting. Third time I thought, wow, and you get nice hot dogs while you're there. But it takes time to enter that world. I would say give yourself time to enter the world of Jesus and his followers. Allow the Bible a chance to speak into your life. I would say, to begin with, let's say it's Mark's gospel, read the whole thing through. Don't worry about understanding every verse or even understanding more than 50% of it. You probably won't. But read it through, get it into your head, and then take it in small chunks, you know, little paragraphs. You'll find in your Bible there are kind of paragraph dividers. Take it as it comes. I would get out a piece of paper and write down all the questions you have as you go. And then find a friend, you know, 50-50 or find a friend. And a Christian friend, and just say, will you chat this through with me? And I'm sure any Christian would be delighted to try and do that. And it's a voyage of discovery. I would say I've been a Christian for, 40 years now, and I still sometimes feel I'm only beginning to discover everything that God is. And I open the Bible, I teach the thing, and I still open the Bible and say, what does this mean? I'm glad I have a whole week to prepare a sermon, because there are whole layers of depth to this thing. But that's part of the excitement. You know, life is mysterious. So the person who built life has got to be more mysterious than the life that he built. Be excited about that discovery and don't run away. He will draw you in. Draw you in as much by the things that you don't understand as by the things you do.
We really hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast today. I hope that what we've discussed has been helpful and enjoyable. And if anything has struck a chord with you, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Link into some of the other materials that we publish on our website on hebron-evangelical.co.uk, Or if you want to just chat, give me an email, community@hebronaberdeen.org.uk. We look forward to next podcast, where again we'll be tackling another topic and asking, what's God got to do with it?